Hey everybody, Nate here. Before the show, I just wanted to take a minute to talk about our sponsor, the Snack Nanny. The Snack Nanny is the latest, greatest spill-proof bowl. It's the first snack bowl for kids with a self-closing door. The Snack Nanny allows kids to snack freely without overeating, keeps kids entertained, and prevents them from creating a mess for mom and dad to clean up. Kids and parents love the Snack Nanny. It's easy to use, easy to clean, and includes portion control features that only the Snack Nanny offers. To order, go to www.snacknanny.com. or order from Amazon. Remember, you support our sponsors and they support us. Thanks and Nihei Debiru. Welcome back to Chop Talk. This is your host, Nate England. If you enjoy the show, please like it on Facebook. And if you listen on iTunes, please write a review and give us a 5-star rating. After cleaning out the archives, we are back to new episodes this week. Today's guest is the head instructor of McLean's Kosho School of Karate in Nashville, Tennessee, and only the fourth person promoted a black belt by karate legend James McLean, my good friend Ezra Scott. Regular listeners may remember Ezra's voice from some of last month's Nashville episodes. A couple of weeks ago, Ezra and previous Chop Talk guest Neil Stinson stopped by Cincinnati to work out for the weekend, and it was a good chance to sit down with Ezra and hear some of his experiences in the martial arts. At the beginning of the show, Ezra talks about his upbringing, and then he shares a fight story that didn't go so well for him, and how that made him want to get serious about the martial arts. In the second half of the show, he talks about how he came to meet his teacher, James McLean, and how he had to overcome severe psoriasis to continue his training. And at the end of the show, Ezra starts discussing his new passion, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. In next week's show, we go more in-depth into the history and development of Jiu-Jitsu from ancient Japan through the modern day, and Ezra breaks down the different branches of Jiu-Jitsu that are becoming popular today. For those of you interested in learning more about Ezra Scott and McLean's Kosho School of Karate, you can visit www.koshokarate.wordpress.com. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show. All right, I'm sitting here with Ezra Scott from James McLean's Kosho School of Karate in Nashville, Tennessee. He drove up to Cincinnati to work out this weekend. How you doing?
Doing good, Ezra. Mr. England.
All right, good. Glad to have you here.
Yeah, we had a good workout, had a good Friday night and Saturday, had a big workout. Mr. Hammond, big workout today. Yeah. Sparred,
worked time. worked some weapons, worked some kata, did a little bit of everything.
Yeah, good time.
So, you know, we had some interviews last week or a few weeks ago. We had some of the different people from Nashville on when I made the trip down there.
Yeah.
I think some of the people probably heard your voice, but wanted a chance to find out a little bit more about you.
Yeah, when I hadn't been drinking.
Well, we pulled that episode.
Yeah.
Right, so you're the head instructor down there now.
Yes, sir.
You're teaching most of the classes at the school. So, why don't you start off and just tell us a little bit about how you got started in the martial arts and how you met Mr. McLean and how that began.
Yeah, well, I think without being too autobiographical, it's cool when to me, I like hearing about what people think led them into, wanting to do the martial arts and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, just like a little bit about me, I was born in Oakland, California, and then we moved to Nashville when I was 4 years old.
Okay.
And I was an only child, and I lived in the suburbs. There wasn't a lot of other kids around, so I was like by myself a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. So, that's one of those things. There's pros and cons to everything. I developed a good imagination,
right,
but I didn't have a lot of people yanking and pulling on me and beating me up and, playing tackle football and stuff like that. Most of the time it was just me and my brain.
So there weren't a lot of kids in the suburbs.
Yeah, it was just me out in the backyard with a stick and a rope, and stuff like that. And I mean, I had friends, they'd come over and stuff like that, but I didn't have, brothers where we'd all, beat each other up and stuff like that. And in Nashville, we have you know, it's in Tennessee. And so we had in the early, like I guess in the like the early 70s, they had integration. So as a result of that,
okay, in the school system.
The school system, yeah. Okay. So as a result of that, people are bused from all over the place. So so that means that, you know, basically you just have like a whole lot of different kinds of people going to school with each other, as far as like from different economic backgrounds, which is not something other places you don't see that as much, where it's like neighborhood schools.
Uh-huh.
And so it can be a little bit of a shock.
So before that, it was Cincinnati. We're in Cincinnati. Nashville was a little bit more segregated. So this was
totally segregated.
Black part of town. This is a white part of town.
Yeah, and even more than that, there is that. But more than that, it's poor kids went to school. Poor kids.
Okay.
Rich kids went to school with rich kids. Okay. That's really
this
what
is
the,
above and beyond.
Yeah, because I mean that race, it's all just economic, anyways. It's just, you know. A rich person's, you know what I mean? It's
right.
Like kind of, you know, if some, you know, black kid grew up in the exact same circumstances as me, we'd be just alike,
right.
You know?
Whether you're in the trailer park or
yeah,
the ghetto.
Now, a lot of those kids that were like the rough kids were black, because it was, you know, black kids from the projects and stuff like that. But there was also, you know, a lot of like real tough white kids from the kind of poor white part of town too. And so basically, long and the short of it is, it was a real culture shock for me when all of a sudden, you know, I started like elementary school, not so much, because I just think the kids were a little more, you know, kids are a little more innocent in elementary school. But I just remember going to fifth and sixth grade, and all of a sudden it was like a whole different group of like poor kids that I had. And I mean, we weren't rich or anything at all, but just, you know,
right.
Kind of middle class, you know. There was like a whole other group of people who were from a completely different background than me. And I'll never forget in the fifth grade going in the bathroom, and there was three kids, and two of them were playing dice. This is fifth grade, they were playing dice like craps in the bathroom.
All right.
And I was like, you know, trying to pee or whatever, you know, probably about had stage fright and was freaked out. Because it's like, oh my gosh, it's like something I'd seen on TV or something, you know. This is like fifth grade, you know.
Right.
I'm a little wimpy little dude, you know.
See, that's what they always show in the movies.
Yeah,
in the seedy back alley. The
yeah, exactly.
The
but
the,
and yeah, and so, and you know, I, and of course, me and my imagination had watched all those shows, you know.
Right.
But so these two kids are playing dice, right? And this other kid, I think he was kind of, his name was Oliver. And I think Oliver was maybe like a little bit touched. He was like a little special, you know, and he tried to pick up their money and just take their money and run, and it was like, you know, $4 or $5 or something. I mean, almost like trying to get beat up, you know, like he just wanted them to pay attention to him or
right.
something. Man, those kids grabbed him by like either shoulder and beat his head into the radiator. I mean, not like they didn't kill him or anything, but
yeah.
I mean, it was really, you know, pretty rough. And it was like, I just remember being like really scared, and I kind of felt like, I sort of remember that as being kind of like a turning point where I was really scared, and I felt
okay.
like I had to like project, I don't know, like some kind of different, like I couldn't really be me.
Right.
I had to be like scary.
Okay.
And so at that point, I started like, as an adolescent, I started to kind of like try to be sort of like, have like a tough guy image.
Okay.
Now I didn't
try to head off some of that at the pass.
I didn't know how to fight. I didn't even like play peewee football or anything.
But you're a big guy. Were you a big kid?
I was a relatively big kid, but I didn't know how to do anything.
Okay.
You know, I was like real not athletic and all that kind of stuff. And so I would just try to be real scary, because that was like the kind of big thing was like, you know, oh man, like if somebody was real scared, oh, you don't mess with him, man, he crazy, you know, like,
right.
That was like, if you were crazy, people didn't want to mess with you, that was kind of a, and so, I sort of started making this image like that, and I really stuck with that, like, all the way through high school.
Was it like a physical image, too? Did you have the mohawk and the...
At a certain point, I did. Yeah, at a certain point, I had, like,
really?
A leather jacket with spikes on it, and, you know, like, yeah, I was really, like...
I want a picture.
And I can show you a picture. I really liked all that kind of stuff. Like in high school, I got into like Black Flag and all that kind of.
Okay.
I always had some kind of little thing that I was trying to do. I had to kind of went through different phases.
Right.
The best thing that I ever did in high school was when I was in like ninth grade, I wrestled.
Okay.
And that was awesome. And that was like my first kind of, I did Taekwondo when I was little, mm-hmm. like around that same time, mm-hmm. I did Taekwondo. So I guess I did kind of have some kind of idea.
Yeah.
But it was not so much. It was like a lot of kid Taekwondo.
You do the little kid version.
They just line us up and we'd wail on each other. Yeah. That was all it was, yeah. you know. But which you know, that's not all bad.
It's not bad. It's really good. It's really good for the kids, yeah. you know, to get them something. And for how old were you with the
I think Taekwondo? It was me and Aaron Dernan. If you listened to last week's episode of Chop Talk, you remember the really strong guy, Aaron Dernan.
Yeah.
Me and him have been friends since we were like little kids, and we were in Taekwondo together.
Okay.
So we actually been punching and kicking each other since we were like seven or something. but that was a really good thing, and that was like I found out when I did that being on the wrestling team. It was at the first high school I went to that I really liked being a part of a team.
Okay.
I really enjoyed that. I didn't do well. In the matches, because I just didn't know how to compete. I had never competed in anything, and they didn't know how to teach me how, but I did well in practice.
And you were in high school at that point, and a lot of these guys had probably wrestled
they were good.
In junior high, yeah. but you were just in it for the first time.
But the first high school I went to, the wrestling coach there was a really nice guy, and he was like more into making it about like having a real good experience for everybody than he was just having everybody had to win all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, not to say there's anything wrong with that at a really competitive right. program, but at that school, that was perfect for me. The second school I went to, the coach wasn't so much like that. Mm-hmm. So I didn't end up doing that. And I kind of at that point, I really sort of started kind of going down a bad path when I went to the new high school. I was just real unhappy and, you know, really, really doing that whole thing of trying to project this kind of hard-ass thing, mm-hmm. you know, all the time, which, you know, ran a lot of girls off from me and stuff like that.
Yeah, you're not going to get laid doing that in high school,
yeah,
buddy.
Yeah, it wasn't, yeah. you know, so yeah. so that was kind of, that kind of sucked, and that kind of continued on, you know, this whole thing of, you know, I really wasn't confident, and so I had to overcompensate for that by acting tough, right? Mm-hmm.
Looking for a way to gain an edge on the competition? Want to give your body some much-needed relief and relaxation? Try Medical Resort ATAC, Okinawa's specialist in sports therapy and wellness care. ATAC offers customizable massage therapy. Try their oxygen chamber for increased metabolism and faster recovery from injuries. Or take their stretching course to improve flexibility. ATAC is used by professional athletes from the Ryukyu Golden Kings, FC Ryukyu, and Ryukyu Corazon. Stop into their center Monday through Saturday at 12830 Oroku in Naha City, Okinawa. Call 098-859-1890 or visit them on the web at www.sanso-atac.com. That's www.sanso-atac.com.
And I had a turning point.
All right.
So here's a fight story.
Okay, fight story. Good. We always love the blood and gut stories.
So I was probably 20 years old. Yeah, 20. And I was at this house party, and it was in at this girl's house, a big fancy house in a relatively fancy part of Nashville. And, I was there, knew pretty much everybody was there, and then a group of guys showed up that were from another part of town called Brentwood, which is sort of a preppy kind of part of town, but they're real into sports out there.
Mm.
A lot of good, super good wrestlers, football players, lacrosse players, all that kind of stuff. And these guys were wrestlers, and they weren't real big guys. They were probably like, you know, all around somewhere from 145 to 175 pound guys. Mm-hmm. And I think there was maybe like five of them. And they came to the party, and they had a vibe, you know, like, you know, we're here at this party, you know, screw you
guys.
Well,
yeah, it's a wrestling team, and they're teenagers.
Well, no, we were all high school graduates.
Okay,
they were my age. Okay. They were 22, right. probably. So they're there, and then when they were leaving, I was standing up on a balcony, and one of them, they thought that I poured something on them, which I didn't. And I probably was being a jerk and like mean mugging them and stuff like that.
Right.
Like, oh, screw you guys, you know, I'm more badass than you or whatever.
Right.
But I didn't do anything to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they threw like a cup of beer up in my face. And like an idiot, I just went running down the I was up on a deck, and I go running down from the deck and around the corner to fight the guys, and they knew I was coming, and they had all walked out onto the driveway except for one guy who was still kind of in between the house and some bushes walking in the driveway.
Okay.
And this idiot was taking his shirt off. So he's got his shirt halfway up over his head. So I grabbed him.
So this is the beginning of the episode of Cops.
Yeah. So I grabbed him and just chucked him into the wall because he had his shirt, while he had his shirt pulled up over his head. And that kind of did away with him for a minute.
All right.
You know? And I got out in the middle of those guys. I don't really remember what happened that much. I was probably... Later on, I talked to one of the guys, one of my adversaries, and he said I did pretty good. He was like, "Oh man," he's like, "You're doing good. You're hitting us and stuff like that."
I didn't. It's one against five. So,
I don't remember. Yeah. I don't really remember hitting him, but I was just like after him, you know. And at one point, one of the guys grabbed me by the neck, put me in a headlock, and pulled me down on the ground. He probably kind of did some sort of hip toss or something, but we ended up with our bodies sort of parallel on the ground, where he had me in a headlock, and we were both up on our knees. And he's yelling to his friends, "Kick him in the face.
Oh.
Kick him in the face." And I had already been getting punched in the back of the head, which at the time really wasn't having much effect on me, or punched or kicked in the back of the head.
Yeah.
I didn't notice it really doing anything. Yeah. But when he started saying that, then all of a sudden I kind of like snapped to like, "Oh shit, I'm in a bad spot now. These guys are going to kick me in the face. Like, this is not good."
Yeah.
So I hit him with a hook punch in the sternum. And he let go of me and kind of rolled over. And I stood up. And the place, the part of town where this was is real hilly. It's in West Mead. And I was on an aggregate driveway. And the aggregate driveway had about a 5-foot drop down to the ground, which was a hill.
Okay.
Okay, the whole thing is up on a hill. So this guy was like, he was like, I'm just standing there, like, reeling now. The adrenaline's starting to go away, and I've been fighting all these guys. And he goes, and I mean, I think this guy had his heart in the right place. He was, like, wanted it to be fair. Because he probably didn't like it, that he would have way rather if there was, like, more guys there that he could have fought, that they could all fought.
Now, the guy who was telling his buddies to kick him in the face is the one who now wants it to be fair, or this is a different
guy? This was a different guy who was really the coolest one out of them, I think. Right. And he goes, "It's just you and me, man, you and me," or whatever. And I'm just like, okay, you know. So I kind of halfway put my hands up. I didn't have any stance or anything. Yeah. I had on cowboy boots.
Well, you're from Nashville, so that's...
This guy, and I've never worn him since. Never. I'm serious. That was a turning point for me. I've never worn cowboy boots again. This guy lined up inside Kibodachi and hit me dead in the sternum with a skip sidekick.
Wow.
And it was a freaking hot one. I think he did Taekwondo out in Brentwood. I mean, because it was an awesome skip sidekick. Blew me ass over teacups off of this embankment. I go rolling down the hill. I rolled, somersaulted probably 6 times, landed, like rolled back rolled into a tree.
Ooh.
On my shoulder, where my head, it was like not a big tree, probably like a 6-inch caliper tree.
Mm-hmm.
My head was next to the tree. So if I would have been like 3 inches over, I probably would have got really hurt, you know, my head or my neck. Could have been paralyzed, you know. Yeah. And I remember laying there just thinking, man, what is wrong with you? What are you, you know, like, you need it. What are you doing, you know? But I heard them up there yelling at me, you know? And now it's starting, and they had one of them that was one of these guys that when he gets in a fight, he's got to run everybody down.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And he's yelling down there. I mean, it's like, well, I ran out there to fight all these guys. I'm going to go up there and get my ass kicked. I don't know what to do. You know, like, I'm not going to just sit down here like a wimp, you know?
And you got everybody else watching you.
So I stood up and walked up that hill. And, man, I felt like I was in the Civil War or something like that. I'm, like, going up this hill like in the Killer Angels or something, you know? And I get up to the top. And the girl whose house it was comes out of the house like a banshee. And just screaming at the main guy. Sticking her finger in her face, pushing him. You know, you get hell out of here. I don't ever want to see any of you guys again. You come to my house and beat up my friends. Of course, she didn't realize I ran in there and tried to beat them up.
Yeah,
but still, you know, I mean, it was them, all of them beating me up, you know.
Right.
So anyways, but after that, I really kind of like had to come to Jesus, because it was like I realized a couple things. I realized that, A, my idea of what I could do was not in line with what I could actually do, and I didn't like that. Frankly, I wanted to be able to fight better than that.
Right.
I knew I had blown it by going down there to fight all those guys. But that said, I had this idea that I should be able to beat up a bunch of people, which was kind of dumb, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like a bunch of, you know, that's silly, you know. But anyways, I knew that I wanted to be able to fight better. And I also knew that I needed to kind of get my act together because it was like, man, you know, you're kind of blowing it.
Hey everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks. Remember, if you have an upcoming seminar, tournament, or other martial arts event, let us know, and we'd be happy to announce it on the program. And now, back to the show.
And I had this friend named Shannon O'Connor. I used to always hang out at this coffee shop with him. And he's, Shannon's like 40, 42 or 43 now. Mm-hmm. But he always just hung out at this place. He's just always a real cool guy. He's a martial artist. Had been doing Kung Fu and karate since he was like a little kid. Just one of those guys that was all he was into. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like that and lifting weights. Yeah. And just real nice guy. Everybody had a lot of respect for Shannon that was around him. Mm-hmm. I could see. And everybody liked him. Everybody treated him with respect, but I could tell nobody wanted to mess with him. Okay. Even the guys, because there was guys that hung out at that coffee shop that really were pretty tough, thugged out dudes that could really fight, and I had like seen them really wear people out.
This was not before. Starbucks, because I have not seen.
It was like Belmont Boulevard in the 90s.
A lot of hipsters and.
It was still like, it wasn't like the ghetto or anything, but it was still like, there was like some little bit more real kind of stuff going on around there, you know, little kind of tougher guys. But even those guys always treated Shannon with respect, you know, and I just thought, man, that's like more like what I want to be like, is like, you know, where people like me and everything, but still wouldn't mess with me, you know? Yeah. And I knew that I needed to, like, really learn how to do something, not just, like, you know, I wasn't just going to, like, buy some book about Muay Thai and be able to fight or something, you know? Which, at that time, ironically, that's, like, what I thought was, like, the cool martial art.
Well, yeah, Muay Thai. That was big. We were talking about the mid-90s at some point,
or late 90s. Jean-Claude Van Damme had just got done with all that. UFC and all that had kind of started, you know? So I went and asked Shannon, would he teach me martial arts? And he's like, yeah, sure. You know, just meet me over here and, you know, we'll work out and stuff. And he showed me some things and we, you know, worked on pads and we did like a little bit of grappling, but mostly like pad work, kind of like throwing big roundhouse kicks and, you know, just power punching and stuff like that. And he is a IOGKF black belt. And I don't know what he was in some sort of, he's one of these guys that he'll kind of train with one group for a while and one group for a while and bounce around a lot, but he is really legitimately really good because he's so consistent with the fact that he always trains.
Okay.
So whatever group it is.
So he's not like one of these guys who runs out and gets his yellow belt from one school and his blue belt from another school and then founds his own style called Chicken Fu.
He's a black belt in something.
Okay.
But he's definitely a black belt level martial artist.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So. There's a big difference between those guys and the guys who just learn a couple basic punches.
Yeah. This guy's a real deal. Okay. Shannon's a real deal. You know, real tough guy. And he's one of those people too that's been working. He's been working at Magawara for like 25 years or something, so like he's really got some deadly weapons there, you know. But anyways, he had met Mr. McLean and had started training over there with Mr. McLean a little bit, which that didn't last too long. He stayed for a little while, and then they had their differences, and he went elsewhere. But prior to that, he told me, he was like, look, if you want to do martial arts, you need to go talk to this guy because he is really good. You know, like he was like, this guy's world class. He's mm-hmm. beyond anybody else in this city. If you want to do martial arts, that's who you need to go see. Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, okay, you know, I mean, I'll go over there. And I was kind of freaked out, you know, because I liked Shannon and was comfortable with him, right? You know?
And making that change is really tough for people.
And he told me, he was like, no, it's not, you know, I mean, it's going to be kind of intimidating, but they're good guys. They're not going to, like, beat you up or anything, you know, so mm-hmm. you don't have to be, like, real scared. But, you know, he's old school, so it's not like you can just, you know, you don't just walk up and say, hey, what's up, man, or something to him. You know, you got to, like, call him Mr. McClain, and you got to bow, and you're going to have to learn how to do all that stuff. You know, so I'm like, okay, you know. And I even remember thinking, like, oh, like karate, like, I don't really, like, I remember telling Shannon, like, I don't really want to do karate. Like, I really want to do Muay Thai, you know. And Shannon was just like, man, he's like, karate's awesome. You don't know anything about it. Just go in there. You'll see. It's cool. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I was like, okay, you know. So I went over there, and I don't really remember. It was the first about, like, 6 or 8 months of being over there was blur, because it was like just so like intense to me to be going and doing something like that. I wasn't really the type of person to get out and go. You know, I mean, there's a reason why so many people like go in a dojo like one time and then don't ever go back. It's intimidating, you know, and especially when you don't know anything about that stuff.
And it's also it can be a little emasculating for some people, especially young men.
Yeah, because if you think you're a badass or whatever, and then you go in there and find out you're not.
Yeah, you know? Find out you're not, or you have to admit that you're not.
And,
That's really tough for people. You go into some place and go as another grown man, oh, I need you to teach me how to fight.
Yeah.
That's something that a lot of people have.
Because a lot
really
of people in America, because we watch too damn much TV, just think that you're naturally supposed to be able to fight.
Right.
You know, it's like, which is so not true at all, you know what I mean? And I don't know, but I mean, I guess one thing that I remember when I first went in there was seeing the pictures of Mr. Duffy and Tex Cobb. That was like one of the first days I went in there. Uh-huh. Mr. McClain had like a bulletin board up over this Makawara and sand trap apparatus that they had where you could like work your nuketes in the sand.
Oh, cool.
They had this board up with a bunch of pictures, and they were all like, Tex Cobb, who I knew who that was, you know, the boxer. I mean, because my dad was a big boxing fan when I was growing up, so I knew about Tex Cobb.
He had the fight with
Larry Holmes.
Larry Holmes.
And I mean, he was really, Tex Cobb was a big deal because he was like one of those guys that he was not going to be the heavyweight champ, but if you wanted to be the heavyweight champ, you had to be able to go 12 rounds with Tex Cobb because you weren't going to knock him out. Mm-hmm. And it showed something about you as a fighter, mm-hmm. that you could hang for 12 rounds with somebody who could hit real hard and that wasn't going to go down. Mm-hmm. So he was a real a threat to people, you know. So here's these pictures. This is Tex Cobb. I know who he is. And then this other guy, who's now I know is my friend and teacher, James Duffy.
Right. Who's 6 foot?
He's
four
so much scarier looking than Tex Cobb. I mean, you know, I'm sitting here looking at this picture, and I thought, Jesus, these. I could see that they were there at the dojo. So it's like, are these guys gonna like come over here? You know, like it was really wild. You know, and at that time, Mr. McClain still came out and talked quite a bit. Mm-hmm. That was before he started having health problems and stuff like that. And he was still, you know, real badass. You know, physically. And he still taught some. And Mr. Spencer, that you've met before on your trips to Nashville, he was my primary instructor.
Okay.
For the first, you know, quite a while that I was there. And, you know, it was just real, real good traditional karate training a la Mr. McClain, you know. Mm-hmm. Lots of basics, you know, basic technique. That was what he was always, you know.
Yeah. And you stuck with it, and you wound up being one of the only... At the time you were promoted to black belt, you were only the third or fourth person that he had ever promoted
apparently,
to black belt.
Apparently, so he says.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, so it's been quite a journey. There's been hard spots. That was when I was 25, I started having psoriasis really, really bad.
Okay. And this is how long after you've been working out the dojo?
I've
5 years?
Okay. 5-6 years, yeah.
Okay.
And something like that. Actually, you know what? It was like right around when my daughter was born, so
we were about 28.
I was I was 27 when Rowan was born. So.
And by the way, the other voice in the dojo is Neil Stinson, who also stepped into the studio a couple minutes ago.
So it was like, I think it was probably more like 2006 when I started getting psoriasis real bad. So I had gone about my life as a normal, healthy person.
Okay.
My entire life.
Quote unquote normal.
I'd always had a little bit of like dry, kind of itchy skin behind my right ear, which I still have ever since I was a little kid.
Okay.
But that was about the extent of it. And all of a sudden, I just got plaque psoriasis really bad, like you see on the Enbrel and Humira commercials and stuff like that. Horrible. It's not a disease, but it's a...
disorder?
Immune disorder. Okay. It's an autoimmune disorder. So it's similar to like rheumatoid arthritis or something like that, where it's like your body is making antibodies to itself. It's like attacking your inflammatory response, so your skin... just keeps making all these cells, and you have these horrible red places on your skin. I still have some of my geese from when I trained through that that are like, the insides of them are like yellow from all the blood plasma. Well, I could never have, if it wasn't been for it being Mr. McClain's school, like if it was like a big school, more commercial school like Mr. Walker's school, I would have just had to quit because I would have bled all over. It wouldn't have been, you know, but like with those guys, like, I mean, you know, Neil and Andy and all them, we all know each other. They know I don't have AIDS.
Yeah, it's all right. You can go ahead and bleed on me
or whatever. Yeah.
But it was horrible. You get to the point, though, where we would be working pretty, like, low-impact techniques with control, and if you made contact with his gi, that spot would be pretty soaked in some blood in a few minutes. And not like a large red spot, like a gunshot wound or something, but he would turn around, show his back, and it would look like as if you imagine somebody who had gotten whipped really bad, and so they just had these bloody striations all over the back of the gi. We'd get done, and your gi would be blood soaked. I mean, not like completely red, but large streaks. Wow. I mean, all over the place.
And the skin must be really sensitive from that too. So even wearing
it's horrible. And it itches. Moving itches in it? Real bad.
I mean, I've worked out when I've had bad sunburns, and then put the gi on that. That doesn't feel good. I can't imagine.
And it wasn't the type of where you could wear like an Under Armour or another shirt. That would kind of make it worse.
I thought about quitting the whole time. Wow. The whole time I thought about quitting. But I remember one time talking to Mr. McClain about it and just saying, you know, since I like, I don't know if I keep doing this, you know? And I don't really remember what he said, but he was just like, you can't quit. You know, he was real nice about it. He wasn't like, you know, but he was just like, man, he's like, you can't quit. He was like, you just got to figure out how to do it as you can do it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's going to be things you're not going to be able to do, but you just figure it out. He's like, because I know you love karate.
Right.
And you've come too far, you know, because by that point I was like, you know, Sankyu. Yeah, I was like a low brown belt, you know, it was like.
Looking for great entertainment? Want to find the best deals on food and drinks? Use the PubPal app to find great establishments near you. View daily specials, find live bands, karaoke, even poetry. If you're looking for something to do, PubPal is the answer, and it's only a click away. Download the app on the Apple Store and get the Android app on Google Play. And don't forget to like them on Facebook. Visit PubPalUSA.com to find out more. That's PubPalUSA. PubPalUSA.
And that was like the most rank I'd ever seen anybody have at the dojo. Like, I remember when I got Sun Q, I really thought I was somebody because there had not been, it was like Mr. Spencer was a brown belt and that was it.
You know, we didn't know anybody else that had made it past that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mr. Spencer was the highest student. We knew Mr. Riggins would come around, he was a brown belt, but that was about it. So we didn't know, this is before we really knew the AWADs and before most of us.
We didn't have a lot of perspective on that kind of thing. Mm-hmm.
You know, that was really, ever made it past brown belt.
That was like a big deal, you know. But I didn't quit, you know.
Well, that's good. You know, I think a lot of people at a certain point find themselves in that sort of situation where they have something medical or with their body that they have to work around. Mine was probably a little earlier on than yours, where I broke my wrist and just broke my hip horribly.
Yeah.
You know, Neil, you had your
torn ACL and retorn and
right. Yeah. Which you discussed a couple weeks ago in the episode. Mm-hmm. So how did you work around it? I mean, what was the solution? I mean, was it just tough through it?
Yeah, I just suffered. I wore a lot of I'd wear like Under Armour kind of stuff underneath my gi, mm-hmm. which we still all do that in the winter.
We used to wear those soft white Taekwondo pads all the time.
Yeah, I'd wear
mostly
yeah.
because for the striking, you know, because it got to the point when it was really bad on you, like the points that you would strike with were inflamed too. His hands were, his feet were, and I mean, there's one thing to like have it on your body, and we weren't really worried about getting it on our hands. I mean. We knew him really well, but it would be another thing to like strike you and leave like a print of blood,
right.
you know, on your, because we're getting bloody gis at the same time. Right. So he would wear those soft white Taekwondo pads to just sort of cushion the blow a little bit, so he'd bleed through the pads and not on us.
You see that when guys, especially the young guys, try to hit the Makiwara too much, mm-hmm. or they hit a bag wrong, especially a canvas bag, and they scrape all the skin off their knuckles, uh-huh. and then they want to do, and then you try to do form sparring with them, but they. But then every time they hit you somewhere, you get those little dots.
Yeah. You see the senior student, you know, hand his gi top to the other guy and be like, you get to wash this for me because it's your blood on
it.
Or that's the best. When someone goes, oh, you got blood on your uniform. He's like, it's not mine.
Not mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, you have it under control now.
Well, yeah,
right?
Now so. it's been a long road, but I finally found a really good dermatologist.
Okay.
And I'm on a fancy medicine called Humira.
Okay.
That's real expensive that helps. And before that, I was on something called methotrexate, which helped a lot.
Okay.
But it's kind of more primitive and made me feel bad when I took it. So,
was there anything that inflamed it as far as the diet or the working out or
karate,
sweating,
working out at Mr. McLean's school, sweating and getting hit, you know,
wearing rigid white cotton clothing.
It's
you know?
It's like, because it's an immune response. It's
okay.
similar to like rheumatoid, where like if you've got rheumatoid arthritis and you whack your elbow against something, it'll start to blow up, and then. You know, it's like...
It'll kick off the response.
Yeah, it kicks off the response. Well, it's the same thing with psoriasis. It's called Kebnerization. When somebody has psoriasis, if they, you know, hit their arm real hard, then that spot starts getting a plaque on it.
Well, and sometimes the lesions, too, they'd be these large red, like you said, red raised lesions that would just kind of leach blood. And if those get hit or those get abraded, the lesion will get worse.
Mm. Yeah.
Which he's doing all the time.
Right. Yeah. So it was
every
just kind of.
You worked with a partner.
Well, besides that, his job at the time, I mean,
I'm a landscaper,
He's outside doing physical labor
all day, every day. Tearing my hands up, all that, you know. So
and didn't really have, like, a lot of other things you could go
to. Yeah, I picked, like, the worst thing in the world for all that, you know.
Right.
It's one of those things where there's all different kinds of people will tell you stuff about, like, if you eat this diet or you do that, but a lot of that is just you know, thing where Western shame, we think everything that happens to us is our fault, or it's just, you know,
people get sick. Like a little too.
Yeah.
Everybody's had something work for them.
Dermatologists don't. There's not anything that, like, makes stuff like that go away except for taking medicine.
Okay.
You know, basically.
Right. So if you have it, get on the drugs, guys.
Yeah. So, yeah, and I had always wanted that. That might be kind of a segue into talking about jiu-jitsu, because I had wanted to do that for some time.
Mm-hmm.
Because, so, like Mr.
And that's something that you've been doing since, and you started that after you made your black belt.
Yes, after I made my black belt, which, in that, really, it all worked out perfect, because I think that's really good. I think it's really good to, like, I had a guy ask me about that at jiu-jitsu the other day, actually, about karate,
mm-hmm.
and he's a white belt there, mm-hmm. and really is a white belt. Like, he's not done any other martial arts,
right.
You know.
Just a beginner.
He is a beginner. And he's like, what kind of karate is it you do and stuff? I told him something about it, but I was like, what you want to do is stick with this until you get pretty good at this. Mm-hmm. And then when you're pretty good at this, then maybe think about doing something else, but... You've got everything you need in whatever.
Get your foundation.
As long as you're in a legit system in school, you've got every. Just learn that self defense.
Right.
Learn those sparring techniques. If you learn how to do self defense the way they do it, you learn how to spar the way they spar. You're learning about those things, and then once you get really pretty good, then maybe you go and do an disciplinary thing. Because, like, right. So Mr. McClain, that's kind of where, for me, that was always something that I, you know, had thought about and wanted to do was train in other things, especially grappling. But because he's really into that.
He has done training with everybody in the everywhere world. Yeah. In every different type
and
of martial
really,
art.
And really, all those guys of his generation like that were real badass, like him, Yarnell, Shelton, Mr. Keeney, Jim Harrison in particular, Mel Wise, all those guys, Master Keppel, Master Trias.
Right.
They all trained in more than one thing. They all did, you know, striking, grappling. You know, none of them had a problem with saying, like, you know, yeah, there's throws and karate katas, but if you want to get really good at throwing people, you might want to go do judo.
Right.
Or you might want to try Greco-Roman wrestling or something like that. You know, if you want to, you know, be a really, really good puncher, doing a little bit of boxing isn't necessarily a bad idea. You know, all that said, you have to be a dedicated student. You can't be one of these guys like you're talking about that just hops around and gets a yellow belt and everything.
Right.
So even when Mr. McClain, he started doing, you know, cross-training real early. But real early for Mr. McClain is different than real early for other people because when he started, he was working out like 8 hours a day.
And living in the dojo. Literally, this isn't a figure of speech. He lived in the dojo, woke up in the middle of the night, trained for 4 hours, and went back to bed.
So for a person like that, after 2 years of doing that, their basic karate techniques are so strong, sparring techniques and, you know, reverse punches, right. Blocks, stuff like that, that
it's different.
They can go just
It's learn. Not the same as someone coming in for working out 1 hour
exactly.
a week.
Exactly. If you're going to a dojo and you're working out two times a week and maybe one day at home on your own, and you've just started doing that, and you've only been doing it for a couple of years, you don't need to be going trying to learn a whole other system.
Right.
But for me, it's been awesome to go and do that. And at a certain point, my skin started to get better enough, and I also just started to get to where I just didn't care what people thought about it. Because that is a really hard thing for me, is what people thought about it, because you look really weird and people say screwed up shit to you all the time. You know, when you have a disease like that where you look funny, it's really hard, you know, because it's like people say really, really weird, inappropriate stuff to you and it hurts your feelings, man. It's really rough, you know. Yeah. I really wanted to do jiu-jitsu, but I had a perception of that, like everybody there looked like Hickson. Because I had seen Choke, the documentary about Hickson Gracie, and these guys are all like, they're surfers. Brazilian surfers.
Okay.
So they're like Brazilian surfers that do wrestling. So they have like huge traps and like they eat pineapples and fish all day. You know, I mean, they're like.
In shape surfers.
Yeah. They're like, you know, really, really handsome guys and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I kind of thought, like, you know, here all fat, psoriasis, white, you know, like, man, it's going to be terrible. Of course.
These guys are going to be wearing thongs with wax to their ass.
Of course, the reality of it is that it's just a bunch of normal people, you know? I mean,
right.
And even if those guys were there, you wouldn't feel uncomfortable because they don't care about what you look like. They don't look like that because they're vain. They look like that because...
They're from Brazil.
They do... But because they do jiu-jitsu and eat a certain diet so that they can train all the time, right. You know? So they don't, you know, if they were trying to help you with losing weight or something, it'd just be so you felt better and could be a better martial artist, not like because you wanted to, like, have a six-pack or something. They don't care about that, you know. But that has been really a cool thing for me because I got lucky. So I've got... Mr. McMullen were talking about this on the little text messenger thing the other day when I told him I was coming up here. Uh-huh. He was like... How in the hell do you pull this off? Like, he was like, everybody that you train with is like my idol. You know, like, Mr. McClain is your sensei, and you go up there to Mr. Awad's school and train with all these guys and go over to Mr. Awad's house and hang out with him. Like, what, you know? And it's like, I don't know. Like, I work out all the time.
That's it.
But I mean, for some reason, the universe has, and I mean, I felt like, I kind of wanted to tell him, I didn't just because, you know, some of that stuff, it's like, you know, guys don't have different reactions to it, so I don't always just talk about it. I do to you, but not to everybody else, you know. But I almost want to say, yeah, and like my jiu-jitsu teacher is Hickson Gracie. Right. Like, it's like, I don't know. I've just got real lucky with all that,
just,
you know.
I've just found just work hard and don't be an asshole.
Yeah, and the opportunities really come up when you do that. You really end up with these really cool opportunities. Also, you know, I'm fortunate that because I started with Mr. McClain, I know, I have a better idea of, like, what is actually a realistic thing and what is not.
So, yeah, so you're
so
not...
So that's going to attract me to schools and styles that are more realistic.
And not just attract you to that, but if you see bullshit, you're going to be able to cut bait instead of getting 6 months or a year into it and then look around, oh, my God, yeah, what like, are these guys
what
doing?
What am I doing? Yes, yeah,
you know idiotic. After a workout, or not even that necessarily,
yeah,
you can just spot.
Because I had been on Mr. Silver. Eric Silver is my jiu-jitsu instructor. I'd been on his website and read some things he'd written, and it was like, oh, that's like the stuff he was saying about martial arts was like about promotions was one of the big things.
Well, hold on,
because they promote really slow, and that's similar to
so.
That's all for the first half of my interview with Ezra Scott. Thanks to Ezra and Neil for making the drive up to Cincinnati. And once again, to learn more about Ezra Scott and McLean's Kosho School of Karate, you can visit www.koshokarate.wordpress.com. Be sure to tune in to next week's episode as Ezra takes us through the history of jiu-jitsu and goes into the different branches of modern-day Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. Nihei Dibiru and Matayat. Hey everyone, like the show? Enjoy hearing interviews with martial artists from around the world? Then share it with a friend, family member, co-worker, everyone at your dojo, your fellow karateka. You can find new episodes every Sunday at choptalk.podbean.com. That's choptalk.podbean.com. And don't forget to like the show on Facebook. Thanks.